Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo-woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. Ty Hildebrand here, Dan Rubenstein over there. SolidVerbal at gmail.com, as always, is our email address. Don't forget, you can also find us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Snapchat, on Instagram, and most importantly, on iTunes at itunes.com/solidverbal. Dan Rubenstein, how was your Thanksgiving? What are you thankful for?
I'm thankful for everybody that listens to the show, Ty.
That Me is too.
So supportive. And yeah, that downloads, that emails, that tweets, that, you know, makes this a fun interactive experience, even when both of our teams are 4-8.
Woohoo!
4-8.
Boom!
And thank you, Ty, for rooting for a team that is the universally hated team of college football and taking all of that shine.
I do what I can Oregon. Here. I do what I can to make this a fun show.
Yeah. So even in years like this, in which we are not personally having fun as it relates to our own teams, I'm so thankful for all the weird fun that we get to have with an incredible group of listeners. That's what I'm thankful
for. Should I just do like a full-on heel turn and embrace the darkness of being the bad guy on the show?
You're not the bad guy on the show. You're clearly the more likable person between the two of us. Yeah, you're like minus 27 and a half on the likable matchup. But I think if you could embrace the fact that you do root for the most hated college football program, that might find that you might find inner peace if you are able to accept that.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Rivalry week is in the books. We'll get into unpacking the 4-8 seasons of Notre Dame and Oregon a little bit later on in the program. But man, what a crazy Saturday/Saturday night. And I emphasize Saturday night because I was watching the Colorado game and decided, I'm going to go upstairs. I'm going to go to bed. I'll flip it on the TV we have in the bedroom. And solid wife Kate was in there. She was actually finishing up watching Love Actually.
Okay.
So I had the laptop with me, and I had the Colorado game streaming on one side, and I had TweetDeck running on the other, and the Colorado game finished.
Naturally.
And all of a sudden, it was like that old ESPN commercial where they did the old Y2K test.
Y2K test in 3, 2, 1.
Oops.
You know, you're trying to follow along on Twitter with what's going on, and holy hell, we had Tennessee lose, we had Mark Helfrich rumors, we had Brian Kelly rumors.
Is that the Charlie Steiner, follow me to freedom?
That's exactly what it is.
Okay, just making sure. Yeah,
it seemed like a lot broke at once, so trying to follow along on TweetDeck, solid wife Kate was next to me. She's like, is there something going on in college football? It was like trying to read the Matrix, Dan, as everyone tweeted simultaneously, so got a little bit hectic there later on in the evening, which we'll do our best to discuss as well. In addition to, we'll talk about all the college football action that transpired on the field in week 13. Shall we first start with reverbs?
Yeah, that'd be a good spot. We need some healing.
Healing commence.
Now, Ty, I want you to do me a favor. I want you to pour me a tall, warm, salty, milky glass of Jim Harbaugh's tears.
What's up, fellas? Paul from Chi-Town.
Hey, Dan and Ty, it's Michigan Andrew. Driving a long way back from Columbus. Obviously really bummed out.
Hey, this is Nathan calling from Vienna, Austria.
Hey, Dan and Ty, it's Kate from Richmond.
What a win against the Michigan team that frankly outplayed them on the field, and they still managed to get it done.
I'm 9 years old, and Michigan has only won the game once in my lifetime.
You've talked all year about the baby Buckeyes. Turns out Jim Harbaugh was the biggest baby all along.
Got done watching Michigan draw the defeat from the jaws of victory. Two interceptions, a fumble, game-killing penalties. Nothing worse than watching Ohio State win as a Michigan fan in Ohio.
I'm a little embarrassed because I just called the FCC
to complain that it was a little bit aggressive for the network television to show a snuff film on a Friday afternoon, but they reassured me that I was simply watching the Apple Cup.
Big Husky fan, and 3,000 miles for Pullman is about as far as Mike Leach's offense was from the end zone this week. Go Dogs, Pac-12 North champs.
On the way back to society from Pullman, that's what a top five team does to a good team. On our way to Santa Clara.
Just got done watching the Apple Cup. Hope Luke Falk is one of those hosts from Westworld, because guess who just got murdered?
Turns out Georgia alumnus Kirby Smart just can't win the quote-unquote big game.
Well, Gators, we spanked you yet again. But hey, don't worry. It's not like you have to play Alabama next week.
Now I'm just wondering, what was your favorite third down conversion by Florida?
I just wanted to know, what has been your favorite touchdown scored on the Alabama defense since October
23rd?
This is your weekly reminder that Tennessee is not a good football team, and we were dumb for ever thinking that they were.
Dan, Ty, help. I need someone with a pulse to play defense for Ole Miss.
Glad it's finally rivalry week so I can throw out Oregon's record.
USC tried so hard and got so far, but in the end, it doesn't even matter.
But there isn't anything quite like watching a meaningful college football game in Colorado in the month of November. Let's go Buffs.
Just watched my Buffs go 10-2. South Division champions of the Pac-12.
I do believe the Wahoos got murdered.
So, Pitt opened the Big East basketball season with a 76-61 win over Syracuse.
Watching Nebraska lose today was like watching your old college car finally fall apart and bite the dust out in the desert.
Although Joey Julius did not get his Heisman Trophy moment in the end zone, I am certainly thankful for Penn State winning the division.
So Penn State's margin of victory was three times more that of Ohio State and Michigan combined. The Gallant Grant Trophy, it just means more.
We finally have Patrick Mahomes in a winning effort. Yay!
Hey, Dan and Ty, what you hear in the background is the sound of a horned frog wind.
Just calling to say Nevada, a 10-point underdog, goes into Las Vegas and gets a 5-touchdown win over UNLV. Brings home the Fremont Cannon. Throw those records out the window.
I just got done watching my alma mater, Western Michigan University, finish off a perfect 12-0 season. And after today, watching Boise State and Houston lose, I just have a question for you. Which group of five team are they going to rank above Western Michigan this week? Go Broncos, row the boat.
Just wondering if you guys got stuck having to watch the NFL football games on Thursday, your Thanksgiving, saying he went to that school. He went to that school. He went to that school. He went to that school.
All right. Thank you again for calling in. 408-VERBAL-1, 408-837-2251. Big thanks to our friend Taylor from Talking Terps, who compiles those fine reverbs each and every week.
The best.
He will be at the Army-Navy game.
Nice.
He will be at the Army-Navy game representing the Solid Verbal, getting some interviews and some quotes from fans and the like. So we'll discuss that a little bit more in the coming weeks, but yeah, we're going to have a presence at Army Navy. Big thanks to Army Navy for inviting us to take part in the festivities.
I like hearing that.
So I guess we should start with Ohio State, Michigan, right?
Yeah. The silver medal game of the Big Ten East. Yeah. The
silver medal game to end all silver medal games, right?
Yeah. Fight for the right to run up in the Big Ten East.
Ohio State 30, Michigan 27. It went to double overtime. Mm-hmm. What was to you the most interesting storyline and or player in this football game, Dan?
The most interesting player to me was Wilton Spate, because there's a strong case to be made that he was both the best quarterback in this game and the worst thing to happen to the scoreboard for Michigan in this game, with his backbreaking pick six and another interception, which soon got piled on top of by a Jim Harbaugh unsportsmanlike penalty, whatever it was called, the sideline penalty.
Yeah.
Put Ohio State in prime position to score their second touchdown and the final touchdown of regulation for Ohio State. So people are going to point, Michigan people are going to point to officiating, and certainly there were calls that went against Michigan. Certainly there was the call that it was unclear how officials could reverse the fourth and one play, even if it looked like it just wasn't definitive with the call on the field. And also, Ty, to be fair, the drives in this game, and I'm pulling up the drive chart right in front of me right now. These were Michigan's first seven drives.
Yep.
First six drives. Punt, punt, field goal, punt, punt, interception. It is a difficult thing to blame anything but your own team when that's how you start the game out, right up until halftime. And then after their touchdown at the beginning of the second half, when they look like they were in control, interception, punt, 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 end of game.
Yep.
So to me, the story is both offensive lines looked completely overwhelmed by very good defenses. JT Barrett has not been the same quarterback all season long and has had a particularly underwhelming season this year, just like overthrowing people, taking a ton of time to read defenses. And the fact that Wilton Spate played injured and made some huge throws, that was also of note to me.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned JT Barrett, and you hit all the right points, by the way. You mentioned Wilton Spate. Basically, his two most significant completions were to Ohio State, one early, one late. You mentioned Michigan's inability in the second half to, I would say, get a ground game going, which made it hard to sustain drives. You mentioned three punts, the fumble, the interception. All that stuff makes it really hard to win. Coming back to JT Barrett, though, to me, he was the most interesting player in this game because he really was the X factor. You're right, he wasn't good throwing the ball. He's had trouble with that all year. Kirk Herbstreit mentioned on the broadcast how uncomfortable he looked in the pocket. He didn't get much protection, mind you, but even when he did, he was inaccurate. At one point, I watched this game with Mama H. At one point, I said to her, gosh, he's kind of a liability back there right now.
Yeah.
He just didn't know what was going to happen when he threw the ball. He was making dumb decisions. It could have come off the swivel there, but it didn't. To his credit, he got it going with his legs. And after he got it going with his legs, then it seemed as if he found a little bit more confidence. Then he made some bigger throws. You mentioned some of the missed calls. They did play a factor.
It was the PI near the end, yeah.
They absolutely played a factor.
The missed PI, yeah.
The missed pass interference call, for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to point to that as the sole reason why Michigan lost this game, but it would be negligent to not admit that it played a factor.
Sure.
Ohio State now in position A. Works out absolutely perfectly for them. They don't got to play next week. They don't got to risk losing to Wisconsin. They don't have to risk injury. Essentially, they are on bye until New Year's Eve, barring some late change of fate here in which the committee decides to bounce them out, which does not seem probable.
JT Barrett, for as clutch as he was with his legs, and this was, I think Ryan Nanny looked this up, on dropbacks, his yards per attempt, so erasing sacks, his yards per dropback attempt, 3.1 in a winning effort.
Wow.
That's incredible.
This was the best game of the day, Dan. I'm glad we had it. It was fun to watch. We could talk about big picture as it relates to Michigan here momentarily, but first we do need to talk about what happened elsewhere in the Big Ten. So by virtue of Ohio State winning, that opened up the door for Penn State to jump up and snatch the Big Ten East title, and they did. They did. 45-12 was your final here, Dan. I remember 8 weeks ago, we talked on this program about James Franklin and how it might be best for Penn State to look in a different direction. At that point, sure, they had lost by 39 to Michigan, and it didn't look as if this whole reclamation project on offense was going so well. But here we are. Penn State wins 45-12. They've won a bunch of games in a row, and they've done so by capitalizing on big plays.
Mm-hmm.
What really needs to be mentioned here is the big play potential. Trace McSorley now, I saw, averages over 16 yards per completion.
Had 22 yesterday per completion, yeah.
Right, which puts him tops in all the nation. His four touchdown passes were of 34, 45, 59, and 40 yards.
Mm-hmm.
He's gotten real good at doing that little Tecmo Super Bowl move where you drop all the way back, then run full speed towards the line of scrimmage and throw it.
Uh-huh.
If only to maybe get some more oomph on the ball, because he doesn't have a whole lot of that naturally.
Uh-huh.
However, Joe Moorhead and James Franklin are doing this. it's been amazing. It has been amazing, and it's been one of the better stories in college football, at least from a football standpoint, that we've seen all year. So Big Ten East goes to the Penn State Nittany Lions. They finish up the year, the regular season, 10-2.
Yeah, you certainly, along with, I suppose, PJ Fleck, Mike McIntyre, and I'm sure I'm leaving out other people, maybe Neil Brown, James Franklin, National Coach of the Year. That has to be a very serious conversation. They start out 2-2. They lose to a pretty decent Pitt team. They lose to a clearly very good Michigan team. And people are sort of wondering if Trace McSorley is the guy, if, you know, the new coordinator hires are working out. And they roll off 8 straight.
Yeah.
And it is quite impressive. Trace McSorley has, I mean, am I wrong to say he has clearly surpassed Christian Hackenberg?
It's Trace Mox Sorley, Dan.
Excuse me. Trace Mox Sorley.
That's right.
Yeah, I would assume so, right?
No two ways about it.
In his first season starting, leading them to a division title, leading them to the Big Ten championship game, and leading to a ton of big plays, and certainly having Joe Moorhead is a difference and perhaps a difference maker, but an incredible year for Penn State. And should also mention Saquon Barkley went down injured. He appears to be okay, I think.
Yeah,
was up and walking, but he was a complete non-factor against Michigan State. Penn State couldn't really get anything going on the ground. And as you mentioned, they look like a very good second half team. So
yeah,
weird year for Michigan State. Weird. Just completely unexpected. They finished 3-9 after making the playoff last year. Last year they were in the playoff. They finished number 4, 3-9. That's an incredible fall.
We could have an entirely separate podcast talking about unexpectedly incredible falls, Dan.
Yeah.
Okay. There were plenty of teams that fall into that category this year, but Penn State was not one of them. 10-2. They're going to go up against Wisconsin now. Wisconsin was actually losing for a while against Minnesota, but then found a way to make some big plays and switch it on in the second half. You could argue, Dan, and I realize this may be a bit of a controversial opinion.
Okay.
You could argue that Mitch Leidner's banner 9-for-26, 4 interception day played a factor here.
Sure.
In giving the game, you could argue that that's why Wisconsin won. Alex Hornibrook was knocked out of this game with an apparent head injury, which is something to follow now in the build up to that Big Ten championship game.
I would also respect Wisconsin's pass defense as well, though.
Totally.
Just Mitch Leidner.
Yeah. Totally. No. I'm
shout out. Jazz Petey as well.
Here's where this gets interesting.
Okay.
You could absolutely make a stronger case for Michigan at 5 than at 7 behind Wisconsin and Penn State because Michigan beat both those teams earlier in the year. If in fact that happens, and if something goes whack like Washington loses to Colorado, that's when the rubber really meets the road. Would the committee put the number 2 and 3 teams from the Big Ten East into the playoff over the actual Big Ten champion? We'd have two teams then, neither of which won their conference or their division, getting their way into that top 4.
Why do you even play a Big Ten championship game then?
That's the point.
What's the point? Why are you going through the motions of like rewarding a team for winning a conference and not putting them? Penn State beat Ohio State. That is a fact. That is a thing that happened. Wisconsin lost by a touchdown at Michigan. That is a thing that is not a decisive victory. I mean, it's great. Michigan has that resume chip. Michigan lost to Iowa, scoring nothing. Michigan's offense in November has been atrocious, right? They're in the 80s, I think, in yards per play in November. And these aren't necessarily all Jim Harbaugh's players. I get that. But we're talking about deep running back core, deep receiving core. Michigan in the playoff would be so boring.
Here's my point, though. All right. And I'm not necessarily arguing with you. All I'm saying is, as of now, there's probably a stronger case for them at 5 than there is for them at 7. If they put them at 5, and if in fact we've got a really tight win by Penn State, let's say in the Big Ten championship, is there a case to be made for Michigan in that playoff? I think it gets interesting. I'm not sure I agree with it, but just saying.
It's a much stronger case for Ohio State with the win over Michigan and with a semblance of a complete team that they scored 60 points against Nebraska and they score a ton at Oklahoma with Michigan.
I'm not arguing against Ohio State.
Right. No, I'm saying, but if we're comparing Big Ten at large possibilities, I don't think there's any way Michigan gets in.
Let's move on. We'll come back to the Big Ten a little bit later.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Apple Cup. The Apple Cup had a lot riding on it, the most riding on it in forever. And
lock of the week.
If we could worship at the altar of Ty for a quick second, Dan.
Let's. I've got my robes on.
Could you, I just need someone to jog my memory here.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember what I predicted as the final score in this game?
I think you had Washington pretty comfortably.
I think I had Washington 49-17.
Okay. That's pretty close.
Final score here, 45-17, Dan. Mm-hmm. This game was over at halftime.
Maybe even before then.
If you had something to do early evening on Friday, dog, you had plenty of time. Mm-hmm. Plenty of time. Washington wins the Pac-12 North. They finish 11-1. Wazoo finishes second in the North. A great season for them. They started with back-to-back losses. They close out with back-to-back losses. They win the eight in the middle. Great season for them. Washington looked impressive. They needed to come into this game. They needed to blow the doors off Washington State in Pullman, and they did just that. How much of this game did you watch?
A good amount. I missed the first couple touchdowns because I was in the air flying back from LA, but once I finally got Fox Sports Go working on my phone, which took a little bit, Ty.
Always does.
The most user-friendly app. I watched pretty much the rest of this game alongside the other couple games that were on. At that time, Washington State clearly tried to stop Washington on the ground and force Jake Browning to beat them and try to count on their secondary. And Jake Browning did so.
Yep.
Washington has a really strong receiving core. They were led by Dante Pettis in this game. He's had an in-and-out sort of year in terms of relevance. It's been mostly John Ross and Chico McClatcher. But they were great. And as soon as Washington State seemed to get a little bit of hope in the, I think it was the third quarter, Washington State controlled this game. They pulled it to, it was like 35-17 in the red zone, knocking on 35-24, and Luke Falk threw a pick.
Yeah,
really nice win for Washington. And they now have Colorado, which we'll, I suppose, mention momentarily. And if they comfortably beat Colorado on a neutral field, a terrible field because it's at Levi Stadium.
It's an awful field.
Neutral field nonetheless. If they comfortably win that game, like 35-20 or something like that, I could not imagine another team, another fringe playoff team getting in over the Huskies.
What is so bad about Levi Stadium? All I hear are complaints.
So it's, nobody lives where it is. It's in Santa Clara. It's in the middle of the Silicon Valley. It's not in San Francisco. So, you know, teams will fly into San Francisco. People that want to go to games generally work in the city around there. So it's, the traffic is horrible getting there. I think the stadium is laid out in a really screwy way. And for a long time, the field, the turf, was just god-awful.
I remember
as well.
The turf was a big liability.
Yeah. So the literal field. It's just a bad situation.
Well, you're right. If Washington wins, I think they're in. It's hard to imagine someone else sneaking up in front of them to snag that number four, even number three spot. As you mentioned, they do now go up against Colorado. Colorado has had an incredibly charmed season, Dan. Mm-hmm. A little bit of a backdoor cover here. For Utah, yeah. The final was Colorado 27, Utah 22. Utah scored with about a minute and a half left to cover this point spread. If you did stay up to watch, and even if you streamed it in the background while you were watching Love Actually with your wife, this is a pretty good football game. It was close until late, right? It was close until late. That's when Colorado returned a fumble for a touchdown to go up 11. Their defense held on. Their defense looked solid. Their defense forced four turnovers for Utah. It's really tough if you're Utah to win with four turnovers. It's really tough when you've got a team on the other side that is not committing any penalties at all. Zero penalties if you look at the box
That's
score.
Tough.
It's tough to win when you're turning it over four times and you're going up against a team in Colorado that's not beating themselves. Now, Colorado did have some turnovers as well, but the point remains that this team all year has been really good at not beating itself. They've been really fundamentally sound. They've gotten better at quarterback. They've gotten better at running back. They've just been really solid across the board, and especially on defense. So if you're looking for reasons why, how could this possibly happen? That's why. They've just been solid across the board.
Yeah, and they were unlucky these past couple seasons getting really close, and finally they break through with the defense of all things. Colorado has had a magnificent season. They certainly have a chance against Washington because of good quarterback play and good defense. They ran the ball all right, nothing special, but I like Philip Lindsay as a running back. And if they can limit the turnovers and play the kind of defense that they've been capable of, and I imagine that they'll be able to keep Washington down a bit through the air, Colorado has a fighting chance. It was fun to see. And Utah, just, you're right, they shot themselves in the foot a ton. It wasn't even just the turnovers, just drop after drop after drop. They did not have the focus going in and during the duration of the game to win. And good for Colorado to hold on.
Can Colorado beat Washington?
Sure. Yeah. The key, it seems right now, what we saw from USC is really good defensive back play. We saw Dory Jackson. We saw Biggie Marshall for USC be physical, be in the face of Washington receivers who are good, but they're not particularly big. So they can be muscled a little bit. And I feel like that is a distinct possibility. If Colorado's able to get a couple short fields, turn USC over a couple of times, we've seen Sam Darnold make some dumb mistakes as a redshirt freshman. Colorado can put itself in position with good defense, good coaching, and they need to hit on a couple bombs to like to Shea Fields or Devin yeah. Ross, whoever.
Yeah.
They need to be able to string together good things, and they can't hope for back and forth. That's where I think it gets tricky. They need to go on like a big second or third quarter run. And then, yeah, absolutely.
Let's go over to the ACC, and we'll talk about the SEC as well, because just given the way that the schedule worked out, some of these games were a bit intertwined. First and foremost, we'll mention that no hiccups, no hiccups at all from Clemson. They win 56-7 over South Carolina. Deshaun Watson threw 6 touchdown passes. Clemson had a 41-14 edge in first downs. They now have a game against Virginia Tech. These two teams did not play during the regular season, but Tech, for their part, didn't hiccup either. They won by 42 against Virginia. Not a shocker that they would look sharp against Virginia, but I like the fact that Justin Fuente left no doubt. Ran it up. He wasn't looking ahead to a matchup with Clemson. He took care of the matter at hand. They finished the year 9-3, and Virginia obviously still has a lot of work to do at 2-10, but Clemson, Virginia Tech, I think is a losable game for Clemson.
All in all, an extraordinarily successful season for Justin Fuente's first year. Somewhat of a disappointing way to finish out the season for Jerod Evans, but he was solid enough against Virginia. The big thing is Clemson's defense is peaking right now. And Virginia Tech's defense has been really good all season long. For the most part, all season long, really good defense. So, yes, it will come down to coaching. It will come down to the depth of skill that Clemson has over Virginia Tech. I mean, between who? Mike Williams, Artavis Scott, Deion Kane, Ray McLeod, Jordan Leggett. This is basically last year's Clemson team. And if they're playing like they played against South Carolina, they are last year's Clemson team, and that they'll comfortably beat Virginia Tech.
I would also add that next week, just in looking ahead,
mm-hmm.
of the 4.5 big championship games that we have, I think the one that I might be most confident in as it relates to the point spread is Virginia Tech.
Really?
We'll get into that on Wednesday.
Ooh.
There's going to be one that's close. Moving over to the SEC, it is going to be Alabama against Florida. We knew that. But Florida State was a big game, right? The Fresh by Florida Sunshine Showdown or some marketing gimmick. Florida State wins 31-13. Dalvin yeah. Cook. I'm going to clap for Dalvin Cook.
Yeah.
He broke a 32-year-old record when he scored his 45th career rushing touchdown. That breaks Greg Allen's Florida State record. I don't think a bad year for Florida State, just maybe not as high of heights as we had expected.
Within the context of how talented they are, and obviously Sean McGuire going down right before the season started with a green quarterback, it doesn't help, and the lines were sort of disappointing, I think, and probably lost them that North Carolina game. But you started talking about the SEC. Alabama finishes the season 12-0, the clear best team in the country.
Can I ask a question about the other 13 teams, Dan?
I was going to ask one too. I wonder if we're sort of on the same path.
I'm just wondering if maybe you know how many losses, at a minimum, those other 13 teams had in the SEC.
At a minimum, 3, which means there wasn't a 10-win team. There wasn't an 11-win team. Now, what you're saying, Ty, is certainly there must be a 9-win SEC team. No. And this year, our $4 million champion, who is the coach that is making $4 million for coming in last place in the SEC West, is... it's Hugh Freeze.
I can't figure out Florida. It's easy to figure out this offense. This offense is really bad. It's a weird situation where you've got an offensive-minded coach with a terrible offense, but a baller defense.
Mm-hmm.
So now they've got this game against Alabama. I don't suspect it's going to do a whole lot to restore confidence in that Florida offense.
I'll tell you what it's going to do for Florida. It should help their future quarterback recruiting because anybody can come in there right away.
If you've got eligibility, Florida is interested in you.
Grad transfer, regular transfer, JC transfer, just a freshman coming in. Florida's got room. Florida's got room if you've got a warm arm.
By the way, Malik Zaire has options, man. He's got options this year.
God, where would you go right now if you're him? Because I'm assuming he hasn't actually made it official that he's going to leave.
He hasn't made it official, but he's
go to Colorado. He's Sefa Lufau's a senior.
I feel like LSU's interesting.
Where's he from? He's from Indiana or Illinois?
He's from Ohio.
So he's not going to go to Ohio State.
I feel like LSU's an interesting place for him.
Yeah, who's just a quarterback away right now?
I feel like if I'm picking, LSU's the pick.
Yeah, LSU's a good option.
Especially with what Lane Kiffin did, if he ends up being the OC.
True.
Especially with what he did with Jalen Hurts at Alabama.
Right, who's not dissimilar, yeah.
He could do some work with Malik Zaire. So if I'm picking right now, gun to my head, that's where I go. Alabama and Auburn in the Iron Bowl, Dan. They win 32-12. In reality, it wasn't even that close. Let me rattle off a few stats for you.
Oh,
Bama
no.
outgains Auburn 501 to 182.
Mm.
They held the ball for 40 minutes. They got 26 first downs compared to Auburn 7. I believe, unless I am sorely mistaken, that Alabama went the entire month of November without surrendering a touchdown. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct.
This was a dominant crock potting. That's what this game was, Dan.
You're going to pour the contents of that crock pot into that iron bowl. Yeah.
I would be content at this point, as a college football observer, to hand the national championship to Alabama. Thanks for coming out. Good job. Okay. Great effort. And just watch a four-team playoff between Ohio State, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Penn State.
You have really a low bar for entertainment. Should also point out, our Darius Stewart is ridiculous and should be commended and even threw a pass in this game. And Bo Scarborough just runs through walls because the Auburn front is not nothing. And Bo Scarborough ran hard and fast and strong. Auburn just could not get anything going. They started Jeremy Johnson. I don't think he completed a third of his passes. John Franklin came in, had a couple nice throws, but nothing particularly special. And Auburn just could not get anything going on offense. And if I had to guess, with the type of defensive year that Auburn had this year, if Auburn does not start looking good on offense early in 2017, the bottom of Gus Malzahn will become quite warm once again.
Elsewhere in the SEC, let's stay put.
It was such a garbage day for the most part for the South. It does just mean more. We should, Ty, disclaimer, we got to say that.
It does mean more.
It does mean more that South Carolina lost by 49 points to its rival. It means more that Tennessee choked away a lead and lost to Vanderbilt by 11. It means more that Mississippi State demolished Ole Miss on the road. It means more that Georgia had a decisive margin in the fourth quarter. I think they were up 13 and lost at home to Georgia Tech. It just means more that the big winner of your day was Kentucky.
Kentucky, by the way, Dan, in a little bit of a shootout.
Oh, yeah.
A shootout we did not see coming, but they win against Louisville, Dan. You know, Lamar Jackson had great numbers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
281 passing, 171 on the ground, 4 total touchdowns, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But when it counted most, Dan, in Papa John's Cardinal Stadium, Lamar Jackson didn't deliver.
No, he did not.
Got to deliver in the pizza stadium, Dan.
Always.
Three interceptions, a fumble. That gave Kentucky's Austin McGinnis a crack at a 47-yard field goal. And he nailed it.
He did.
41-38 on the road, Papa John's Cardinal Stadium. Kentucky ends up 7-5. Louisville, 9-3. Sort of a turd in the punch bowl to end your season, losing to your in-state rival in Kentucky. But
a week after losing on the national stage in embarrassing fashion against Houston.
Absolutely. Kentucky was sort of the big winner in the SEC. Mississippi State won handily over Ole Miss 55-20. Nick Fitzgerald with a monster game on the ground. Dan Mullen really won in the post game, right? A little punchy. Did he catch the audio? Did he catch his audio?
Somebody, a reporter asked him where, who they beat out for Nick Fitzgerald in the recruiting days. And he had a cigar in his mouth. And went, who do we beat out? UT Chattanooga.
UT Chattanooga.
UT Chattanooga. Man, Mississippi State just taking it to Ole Miss. Shut him out in the second half. I don't, and by the way, as a, we're talking about Kentucky Louisville right beforehand. Lamar Jackson does not finish out his season in a fashion that we figured he would after seeing what he did in the first half of the season.
Correct.
Is he your Heisman Trophy winner?
Yes. He is still my
Three
Heisman
picks
Trophy winner.
And a fumble, I believe.
Now, it's not pretty. He's still my Heisman Trophy winner.
I tweeted this from our account earlier this morning, recording this Sunday morning, midday. The quarterback efficiency, so the rating, the quarterback ratings of the last five or six Heisman quarterbacks, their national ranking, their QB efficiency national ranking was generally top five, if not top three. Johnny Manziel was number 13. That was the exception. In November, Lamar Jackson has the 45th best quarterback rating.
Yeah.
I'd be fine with Baker Mayfield. I'd be less fine with Jake Browning. I'd be fine with Donta Foreman. I'd be fine. If we want to have a discussion, Ty, what Christian McCaffrey has done this season warrants a conversation.
I would be inclined to go Foreman if I am picking a second place.
McCaffrey's been the better pure running back than Foreman, just in terms of yards per carry against his conference.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's an interesting debate. We can have that debate at some point here over the next couple
of
weeks.
You know what? There's something else.
Oh?
I don't like the Heisman that much.
No, me neither. I've never liked the Heisman.
It's the biggest deal college football thing that I think is the most boring.
I am not a fan of individual awards.
Okay.
Never have been, never will be. I don't like Halls of Fame. I don't like Heismans. I don't like any of this. MVPs? Nope. Don't like any of them.
I like the Heisman. I gotta tell you that. Because that's moment specific. That's a human award.
I want to talk about Vandy.
Okay, let's talk about Vandy.
2 weeks running now.
The Yakos. Home dog of the week.
Vandy 45, Tennessee 34, Dan. In the words of one Derek Mason, you gotta fear the V, baby. He was pumped up after this win. A long road back to bowl eligibility. For Vandy, they went 3-9 his first year, 4-8 in his second, and now 6-6 in his third by virtue of this win. Everyone said he was a great hire when he came over from Stanford. Initially, it did not look that way, but they gave him time. Things are now moving in a very positive direction. On the flip side, Dan, I think it is safe to say that Tennessee is not going to be making the Life Championship playoffs this year.
No, they're champions already, Ty. Pay attention to the news.
They will not be able to defend their life championship.
That's true. Okay, thank you. I appreciate
it. A really bad loss for them. And not because they lost to Vandy, but just the manner in which they lost, giving up over 600 total yards to a bad offense.
And wasting a pretty damn great day from Josh Dobbs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we got folks now calling for Butch Jones's head. I don't think Tennessee's going to do it. But look, 8-4 with this much talent, especially in a down year in the SEC, that's not good. It's not a good look. If they don't do it this year, clearly he is on a mild seat entering 2017.
Yeah, the interesting thing, too, is if Vandy hadn't taken a step forward this year, it would have been disappointing because of the context of the SEC, with how many down teams they had the opportunity to play. And with what we've seen of Vandy playing to their ceiling, like they did yesterday, Kyle Shurmur had a great day coming off of the decisive win against Ole Miss. Losing to Missouri probably shouldn't have happened. Even losing to Auburn probably shouldn't have happened. They were pretty competitive in that game, and and those are both on the road, so at least there's not that criticism. Losing to Kentucky is fine. Kentucky had a good turnaround to their season after a slow start. Heck, they could have even beaten Florida. We could be talking, if everything broke correctly with this Vandy team, with how competitive they were, especially on defense, that they're like a 9-3 team this year. And I'm saying that, and I'm being as optimistic as I possibly can, because I'm kind of okay with Derek Mason going to UG. I'm kind of okay if that happens.
That's a perfect segue. I do want to enter into the whole coaching rumors, coaching hires discussion here. But first, we got to pay some bills.
Let's do that here, as a number of schools are about to do in a big way.
Absolutely. We've got a bunch of big championship games coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the spreadsheet that I have yet to send you, but I've already got mapped out the games for the coming week. There are some big ones, and there's a chance that if you're living in Atlanta, if you're living in Orlando or Indianapolis, even Norman, Oklahoma, you might want to check out some of these what amount to conference championship games. And mm-hmm. the best way we would advise you do so is via SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, the easiest way to find tickets for all the games that you want to see up close and in person. As you know, Dan, there is nothing like being in the stadium.
Nope.
For the biggest plays, the biggest games of the year. With SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for a great value. We probably sound like broken records. I'm not even reading off a script when I say it. It's just sort of ingrained in my mind. We both have the app on our phone. We yep. both love the app. We have gotten countless tweets about the app and the ordering process. SeatGeek really is the best way if you want to buy tickets to get them. The way it works is they aggregate all sorts of tickets out there from a variety of different ticketing sites. They then have the wherewithal to grade those seats so they can tell you where you're going to get the most value, the most bang for your buck. They back everything up with a confidence guarantee so you can shop. You don't have to worry about, oh my God, are these tickets going to be good? They take care of all that for you. They have a guarantee, 100%. So again, you can shop with confidence. Here is the way this works. Download the app for free. It's a free app, SeatGeek. Once you get it, go into settings, add the promo code SOLID, S-O-L-I-D. They're going to send you $20 after you make your first ticket purchase. The long pause here is intentional.
That's great news, Ty.
Allow that to sink in.
Socks just flew off.
Thank you. Free app, promo code SOLID. You make a ticket purchase. You're going to get the best price because you're using SeatGeek.
Obviously.
After you make the purchase with the SOLID promo code attached, you're going to get $20 in rebates. That's all I got. I got nothing else
Wonderful
to say.
News. Listen, we agree. We're on the same page, Ty.
All right. SeatGeek, check them out. Promo code yep. SOLID. So look, I mentioned coaching changes, coaching rumors, what mm-hmm. have you. Let's talk about LSU beating Texas A&M. So LSU wins 54-39 on Thanksgiving.
Beating them down.
Trevor Knight played. Was good to see him back out there. Darius Geis had other business to attend to, rushing for four touchdowns and 280 some odd yards. Now, let's talk about LSU's direction moving forward. There were rumors that had emerged that perhaps Tom Herman might be the lead candidate for the job, that he was close to being named LSU head football coach.
Handshake agreement.
Handshake agreement.
Yeah.
We now know that to be utterly false.
Well, he may have agreed. I don't know.
Well, he's not the coach.
He's not the coach. At that time, it could have been true.
They have now gone in the definitive direction of one coach, Ed Orgeron. How do you feel about this?
I feel pretty good.
Yeah?
In that I hope he succeeds. I hope that he has the opportunity at home to run the program in his image. I hope that he hires a really good offensive coordinator. The strong leaning appears to be Lane Kiffin, obviously who he has an extensive history with.
Yeah.
It's somewhat difficult to see Lane Kiffin leaving the success that he is almost assured at Alabama, but, you know, sometimes you want to do it your own way, not necessarily Nick Saban's way. And it's understandable that he'd end up in Baton Rouge if he's able to recruit a quarterback. He has already done something, a pretty good quarterback, not even a good quarterback, a pretty good one. He's already done something that Les Miles hasn't really done in recent history. You'll remember Zach Mettenberger was a transfer from Georgia. So I think it's everything is set up for him to succeed. He should be able to bring plenty of talent in LSU. Next year's schedule is pretty good. He's got a really good team. If he's able to retain Dave Aranda, he's in a good place. He has to manage the clock, manage personalities, and keep stocking the depth chart with insane talent. I don't think that's unrealistic. It's a little bit strange that LSU couldn't land somebody perhaps bigger. LSU is a somewhat recent national champion. They play in huge games in November every year. But listen, you can look to USC and what they've done with Clay Helton. You can look to Clemson and what they've done with Dabo Swinney. There is success in keeping momentum with an interim guy and taking that tag off of him. So it's a great story. He played at LSU briefly, I believe, before going elsewhere. And he's from there. And he's a he seems like a likable dude, right?
I yeah, would agree.
Yeah. He drove with the windows down singing music at full volume. He picked up the AD when the AD officially told him, Joe Oliva. So yeah, I'm rooting for it to be a success story.
I am as well. We know he can recruit. We know he's got a great defensive mind in Dave Aranda on the staff.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned supposedly he's going to go after Kiffin. That could be interesting. He's from Louisiana. We know it was like his dream job. It was mm-hmm. destiny. He wanted it. So
his Randy Edsall to Maryland dream job. Absolutely.
Sure. So it's a great story. I hope it works. But to your point, LSU is a top five job. And I can't help but feel like this was a bit of a panic move. Do you mean to tell me there is nobody out there with a more proven track record that was interested in LSU? I find that hard to believe.
Jimbo and Tom Herman are off the table.
Right.
Who is your move if you are the AD? That you are seriously, is it Dana Holgorsen? Is it Larry Fedora? Those were names tossed around.
I don't think it's Larry Fedora. And I don't know if it's Dana Holgorsen. I also realize I don't have all the information. Like, okay. I would be curious for to sure. know what other names they thought of, what other names they contacted. Brian Kelly was like a name that was thrown out there. All right. Now, you could debate the merits of that as an option moving forward, but at least he's got a track record, okay? More of a track record than Ed Orgeron.
Who's beaten Stanford more?
Shut up. I want to know if there were any other names that they at least considered before going to Ed Orgeron. It just feels like it was quick. It feels like they could have gotten somebody else interested, but I don't know. We'll see. I hope it works.
Grass isn't always greener. I mean, LSU's offense was really good in November outside of the game in which they scored 0 points. But as somebody pointed out, I don't remember who, LSU's offense is sort of went into shells after the Alabama game. Whether it was body blow theory, what it was just broken spirit, whatever. That didn't happen this year.
No.
LSU, Darius Geis set an LSU record that was only in existence for 1 month. On the ground, rushing for 285 yards. They carved up a very talented but still very flawed Texas A&M defense. Through the air, no less, as well. Danny Etling was 20 of 28 for 324 and 2 touchdowns and no picks. So, if nothing else, we know that the odds are incredibly slim that down the road, this team will, for whatever reason, quit on the coaching staff, which I think is a pretty huge deal.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. The other coaching news, the big one, it came after Texas lost 31-9. Dan, I was under the impression that Texas players weren't going to boycott this game. This fake news thing we got going on is really a problem.
Oh, it's tricky, Ty. You got to pay very close attention to the URLs.
You don't know who to trust anymore.
Yeah.
After that loss, Texas makes the move. They get rid of Charlie Strong, who by all accounts is a good guy, but it didn't work. I think we're in agreement. They very quickly then move to Tom Herman. Tom Herman is the new coach at Texas. Thankfully, it wasn't a long, drawn-out process. It made a ton of sense. He was once a GA under Mac Brown. He has supposedly wanted this job for years, and he got it. I am rooting for Tom Herman. He's a two-time guest of the Solid Verbal. Maybe we'll get him on again.
It'll
be nice to talk to him and see what his plan is for moving the Longhorns forward in the future. But, you know, the worst kept secret is no longer a secret. Tom Herman now at Texas, and you have to believe that he is set up well for success.
I think so. Yeah, the secret sauce of Tom Herman at Houston was one, he only had 2 years there. So he was not coaching a majority of his own players that he recruited to Houston with that H-Town takeover time.
That's right.
And number two, he did it with defense. The Todd Orlando defense that they ran these past couple of seasons, Todd Orlando, I believe, came over from Utah State, was extraordinary, especially against the run. And I posted it this morning. Houston this year, their offense, yards per play against just FBS teams, 62nd in September, 88th in October, 101st in November nationally. This wasn't a team that was blowing teams out and was super efficient offensively. I know Greg Ward was dealing with injury issues for a good chunk of the middle of the season, but if Texas is going to succeed in the short term, it feels like it's probably, and Shane Beshell is the quarterback of the future, and there are good things. I know there are rumors about Kyle Allen, the former Texas A&M player who went to Houston, who now might follow Tom, who knows? But right now, Texas is getting a coach who hires a really good staff And I know there was some holdup over Major Applewhite coming to Texas, and I know he's going to interview for the Houston job because of an outstanding lawsuit with Texas in a situation when he was there. It's a really good hire. He should be able to continue to recruit extraordinarily well, and I'm curious to see what Texas does defensively, because that has been the issue.
It really has.
That has been, and it will be pretty fun, I imagine, but we'll see. The sample size that we have on Tom Herman as a head coach is pretty small. I do think, and listen, Charlie Strong earned the firing. He did. You just can't lose to Kansas. You can't have a third year and not improve, but he was pouring through some low level talent and depth chart early.
I agree.
It was a climb that he got them out of.
He will catch on somewhere else and he'll be successful. Yeah. I think he's a good coach. It was a bad situation and it always felt like a bit of an awkward fit. We've been talking about it for 3 years now. It always felt like a little bit of an awkward fit. They never fully embraced him, but okay, he's gone.
Next,
let's talk about Oregon.
Let's talk about Oregon.
Oregon did go 4-8. I didn't see as many 4-8 articles posted about Oregon.
People like Oregon.
I didn't see the 4-8 record bolded nine times anywhere else, but okay.
Yeah.
Oregon State beats Oregon 34-24 in the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Rumors have been emerging for weeks now that Mark Helfrich is on the outs. He's got a huge buyout of like $11 million, but
bigger than Charlie Strong's.
Yeah, they are preparing now to make that move to transition somewhere else, Dan. It seems as if the writing's on the wall. Chances are by the time people listen to this, there's a chance that Helfrich will be fired. Which direction do you want to see them go as an Oregon fan?
I have a lot of thoughts. They're mostly boring. I don't know. Somebody with head coaching experience would be nice, would certainly be a big advantage. I don't know. Is there a standout coordinator without head coaching experience? I know Dave Aranda is from the West Coast, from LSU, and he's certainly a name that could help Oregon's offense, but I'm not super keen on that. Locally, there's Bo Baldwin at Eastern Washington. He's had a ton of success there on a stupid field. He just hasn't really done anything else other than coach in the state of Washington at a lower level. And I get that. And it's, you know, Jim Tressel, they're guys that have come from that level to succeed at big places. Of viable candidates that have head coaching experience and have done big things recently, PJ Fleck is a big name. He's been sort of tied to Purdue, and it's unclear if he'll leave the Midwest or the environs thereof somewhere around the Midwest. I mentioned Derek Mason. I wouldn't hate somebody who is under 45 with a defensive background, a West Coast background, and could potentially hire an intriguing young up-and-coming offensive staff. Derek Mason sort of fits that. I wish Matt Rhule coached in, like, Utah rather than Pennsylvania. That would be a little bit better for me. Willie Taggart's an interesting name with what Quentin Flowers has been able to do in the offense, that sort of power spread offense that he's running at USF really successfully this year, should be mentioned. Other than that, you know, Mike McIntyre's done a great job. I don't think his eyes are looking west. I think he's sort of facing east if he's to go anywhere after Colorado. I don't think there is just that candidate. Scott Frost, I don't believe, is going to take the job. I don't think Scott Frost is going to take the job of his former boss. I don't see that happening.
Brian Harsin, to me, doesn't do it.
No.
I'm not that excited about Brian Harsin. PJ Fleck is exciting. He turns 36 next week. He's never been west of the Mississippi. That's a problem. I think that's a problem. I think he's a good coach. I think he could make it work. I think that's a problem. I'm always leery when a guy's going outside his comfort zone. I just don't know how many comfort zone candidates there are out west.
Is Boise State sort of keeping the success of Chris Peterson players now that they're getting farther away from it? I don't think they are. They lost to Air Force again yesterday. Jeremy McNichols had an incredible season at running back for Boise State this year, so there's that.
Brett Rippon's been good. I mean, he's done a good job with the offense, but
he's been pretty good. Yeah. The good thing about Harsin or Taggart or Derek Mason is that there's at least some West Coast familiarity and experience.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Matt Rhule, I think, spent like a year at UCLA 10, 12, 14 years ago.
Yeah. I don't know if any of the names I've heard are enough to get you truly excited if you're an Oregon fan, but we'll see. We'll see which direction they go. The other coaching rumor is one that emerged, and while we're talking about Oregon, we might as well talk about Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. So Notre Dame lost. By the way, let's talk about this game. USC wins 45-27, the battle for the jeweled shalala. A lot to discuss here on the coaching front, but we need to talk about the ending to this game. Did you see the way this game ended?
Nope.
So the line was 17.5.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I saw this. Yeah.
USC was up 24. Malik Zaire comes in, throws a touchdown pass. He makes it 45-27.
18 points.
Brian Kelly says, "We're not playing for the backdoor cover. Dog, we're playing for the win." He goes for two. The attempt fails. USC wins by 18 and barely gets a front door cover.
I wonder how many times you've played that doorbell sound effect and people have like, wait, what? And have looked to their own front door. Because I just looked outside of the VO booth where there definitely isn't a doorbell, but I was like, huh, somebody here?
It's a very realistic sounding doorbell.
It's great. It's great.
So Notre Dame, you know, no answer for Dory Jackson. And I don't really want to talk too much about the game. I'm a bitter Notre Dame fan at this point, if that's not already glaringly obvious.
What is your takeaway from the extraordinarily disappointing Notre Dame 2016 season, a year after making what they were a top 10 team and in the Fiesta Bowl?
Extraordinarily disappointing. I think the whole quarterback derby that led off the season was a great distraction from the fact that Notre Dame lost a ton on defense that it could never recover from. Jalen Smith was good enough to cover up a lot of sins last year.
Yeah.
And
weird, you know, phrasing from you, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Especially at a Catholic institution. And I think we overlooked how good he was. Everyone focused their eyes on Malik Zaire against DeShone Kizer. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as that goes, by not giving the quarterback position to one or the other forcefully and confidently, I think that was a mistake in hindsight. So that didn't help the offense. And then on defense, look, they just lost a lot. Standards that Brian Kelly set early on. And so now we're at this point where the defense fell way short of expectations, working with a young lineup of guys both along the line and in the secondary. A top-to-bottom evaluation is necessary.
It's very strange to see a team fall off that much with mostly really good quarterback play.
Yeah.
And you know what? The teams that they lost to weren't that good.
No, they weren't.
There was that
they
too.
Weren't.
But one of the teams that they lost to, Ty, should be commended endlessly. That'd be the Navy midshipmen.
75-31, Dan.
Yeah.
75-31.
Just got murdered.
Over SMU.
A not bad SMU team. Not great, but Navy is just putting it on people. So how many points did they score the week before? 66 at ECU, 75 at SMU. How many times has Navy punted in the month of November, Ty?
Not once, but twice.
Twice. Two times.
Two times in all of November. Your ears do not deceive you. Navy has punted twice in 1 month.
The Notre Dame game, does it not?
Yep.
That also includes a game against a good Tulsa team. That's incredible. What a year for Ken Niumatalolo, especially after losing Keenan Reynolds.
Almost 500 rushing yards in this game for Navy.
Yep, and they will play Temple in the American Championship game, and then they'll play Army.
All right, let's go rapid fire around the country.
Let's do that.
Some games we didn't discuss, a bunch of rivalries mixed in here. Back to the Big Ten. Iowa 40, Nebraska 10. Two scoring plays of 75 and 77 yards in the first quarter here for Iowa. Not noted for being a big play kind of team.
No.
But they get the job done. They go ahead early. Nebraska is playing catch up the whole game. So Iowa wins. They finish 8-4. Nebraska finishes up at 9-3.
And all things considered, with where Iowa was midseason, having lost to North Dakota State early on, which is defensible, but Iowa's in the Rose Bowl last year. That probably should not have happened. Iowa's defense, really good this year. Iowa's defense, really, really good. Offense just could not keep up for a good chunk of the year. But finishing out in 8-4, all things considered, a pretty successful year for the Hawkeyes. Good for them.
The old Oaken bucket goes to Indiana, 26-24 over Purdue. An ugly game, 7 turnovers. Neither team had more than 269 yards of offense. Indiana needed to win this one to get bowl eligible, and they got it.
Yep.
So 6-6 for Kevin Wilson.
A great defensive turnaround for Indiana, led by Tom Allen, who they brought over from USF. Did a great job. And Richard Lego, in the first year of his starting campaign, a pretty decent year.
Agreed. Agreed. Absolutely. Okay. The Land of Lincoln Trophy goes to Northwestern. They win 42-21 over Illinois. Illinois
took home that hat.
That's right. Illinois finishes 3-9. Northwestern also needed this one to get bowl eligible, and they got it. They get the hat.
Yep.
And Maryland also gets bowl eligible. They are the 10th team from the Big Ten to get bowl eligible by beating Rutgers 31-13. Rutgers finishes a dismal 2-10. In the ACC, the Carolina State rivalry goes to NC State.
It's not a great year to finish. It's not a great finish to the year of North Carolina.
No, not at all.
Yeah, they just let up a lot early on and couldn't crawl their way back. Gotta hope they'll improve defensively next year. Mitch Trubisky's super promising, at least showed it in the first half of the season. Not a great end to their season. No. Not a great end to the season for Larry Fedora losing to Duke and North Carolina State.
Those are the two losses that are going to stick in your craw if you're a North Carolina fan. Fedora did not do much to bolster his resume here. He's a name that's been thrown about as a potential for a bunch of openings in and around college football. 8-4 is not the record you want. 10-2 would have been much better, but Duke and NC State are going to stick in your craw. NC State, good for them. You know, it kind of came off the swivel for them a little earlier this season. Once they got into the meat of their schedule, it was slow going, but they are now bowl eligible as well. So good for them, 28-21. And then the clean old-fashioned hate game. Wow. You mentioned it briefly. Georgia Tech wins 28-27. Georgia had all the momentum in the second half. They were up 13. They let Tech hang around. They score in a long touchdown drive midway through the fourth quarter. And then Jacob Eason throws a killer pick, throws it behind Terry Godwin. It deflects off into the waiting arms of Lance Austin for Georgia Tech. Tech gets the short field, 3 minutes left. They march down the field. They try the gadget play. It doesn't work. But Quay Searcy sees the light, Dan. He runs up the middle, gets the touchdown. Georgia Tech finishes up with a quiet 8-4.
A quiet 8-4, which is especially, well, it's just weird considering where they were last year. 3-9 last year, a year after they won the Orange Bowl. So yeah. Georgia Tech playing just straight into that brand. As soon as you think you know what they are, that's what they're not.
And on the flip side, I'm sure Georgia is pumped, let's say, after firing their coach to now go 7-5 in season one under Kirby Smart.
I was talking to our pal Spencer Hall about it. The Nick Saban poison tree. It's not particularly showing fruit right now. But here we are. Georgia Tech, Paul Johnson. He doesn't think you can run the ball longer than his... and that's great.
Okay.
Good for Georgia Tech.
Speaking of Mark Richt, he wins against Duke 40-21. Brad Kaya becomes Miami's all-time career passing leader.
Another quiet 8-4.
396 and 4 touchdowns through the air for him. You are correct. A quiet 8-4 in his first season. Duke goes 4-8.
BC, bowl eligible?
No. And then there was this Pitt-Syracuse game.
Holy moly, there was.
Holy crap. I hung out with Mama H yesterday. We were watching the games, watching Michigan, Ohio State. She read the score off to me, and I asked her to double check that she wasn't looking at a basketball score.
That was my exact reaction. That was my literal exact reaction.
168 yards for Syracuse, 644 for Pitt, 393 on the ground for Pitt. Dan, 17 drives in the second half of this game. If you count the pick six that Syracuse threw, 12 of these drives resulted in touchdowns. Not much defense in the second half of this game.
On how many plays did Pitt score 76 points, Ty? Do you have that in front of you? 59! Like an NFL game, 59 plays.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. They didn't throw it 20 times to get to 76 points.
Nutso.
Syracuse scored 61 with their backup quarterback, Zach Mahoney, in for Eric Dungy.
If there was not a Syracuse student at this game with a Mahoney's Cajones poster, I will be sorely disappointed. He showed him in this game.
In a minimum of 3 games against ranked teams, which quarterback nationally is the most efficient? Efficient. The answer is Nate Peterman.
Yeah, Mr. Peterman.
Nate Peterman, 9 touchdowns, 2 picks, rating of 155, about 8 yards per attempt. completing about 60% of his passes. That's an incredible year.
All right, let's go to the SEC. Not a rivalry per se. We actually didn't mention this game on Wednesday, and we heard about it from some Arkansas fans. After Arkansas lost 28-24, we heard from some of the same fans who said, you know what, you don't have to talk about this one if you don't want to. Seriously, it's fine. If you got other stuff to discuss, you don't need to go back through this one. It's fine.
Arkansas with a historically bad defensive season.
Yeah, what was the stat you dug up?
CFBstats.com goes back to 2008 with their stats, and no Power 5 team, no team period versus their conference has been as bad in allowing yards per play. 7.8 yards per play against the SEC this year.
Damn.
And that's with pretty much shutting down Florida. If not for the Florida game, it'd be at 8.2.
Jeez.
Which is just god awful. It is so bad.
Brett Bielema's got to be in the hot seat next year, don't you think?
It's a little warmer. I mean, every seat with Brett Bielema is warm, but next year is going to be especially temperate.
Arkansas finishes up at 7-5. Missouri and Barry Odom go 4-8 in year one. Okay. Elsewhere, let's go back to the Pac-12 very quickly. Cal beats UCLA by 26. Speaking of hot seats, I would imagine a 4-8 UCLA is enough to warm the seat of one Jim Mora Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Stanford wins 41-17 over Rice. Christian McCaffrey, to whom we alluded earlier, he finished with 30 carries for 204 and a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the Friday news dump game between Arizona and Arizona State. Arizona wins by a 56-35 margin. They win the Territorial Cup.
ASU starts out 4-0, finishes 1-7.
Not good.
Not good.
And finally, the Big 12, West Virginia beats Iowa State by 30. Texas Tech and Patrick Mahomes win against Baylor 54-35. And Kansas State wins 34-19. They win the Sunflower Cup, or whatever they call it.
Memphis loses Tom Herman's last game. Excuse me, Memphis wins Tom Herman's last game. They beat Houston late. Riley Ferguson had a really nice year, had a really nice game. Western Michigan is 12-0. We should not have saved that till the end, but that is true.
One of the worst onside kicks I've ever seen in my life was in this game.
They beat Logan Woodside in Toledo, perhaps the best quarterback in the conference, if it's not for Zach Terrell, I forget which it is, who's
Zach
been very
Terrell.
Good for a while.
Zach Terrell,
who's been good for a while, and I should know how to pronounce his name.
New Hampshire 64, Lehigh 21, Dan, the, Okay, that's all. Just a short one. There.
That was it?
The dream is over.
Lehigh loses. Eastern Michigan is bowl eligible after being god awful for a long time. That's pretty cool. Should we talk about Texas A&M and what they should be doing moving forward?
Yeah.
Is the Kevin Sumlin experiment, I mean, he's tried changing everything and it hasn't really worked out. John Chavis has not worked out as a defensive coordinator, particularly against the run.
Let's talk about the job that Kevin Sumlin has done sans Johnny Manziel.
Johnny Manziel. It's not pretty.
Yeah.
Bowling Green completely fell off without Dino Babers, and that's too bad. But Western Kentucky, Jeff Brohm is going to make himself some money somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
The Hilltoppers continue to be very good following Willie Taggart and Bobby Petrino, turning them around initially, and he has done a really good job with that offense. Baylor packed it in.
Mm-hmm.
They started out 6-0, and they're going to finish 0-6.
Mm-hmm.
It feels very Big 12 of them. Like, this is them coming back to the pack in the Big 12. Willie Taggart and Quentin Flowers finish off the year really impressively, beating UCF, Scott Frost and UCF. And hey, UCF is bowl eligible. They went 0-12 last year.
Yeah.
They're 6-6.
The Canadian University Football Championship, Dan.
Oh, what do we got?
They call
Who's
it
playing?
The Vanier Cup. It was the 52nd annual Vanier Cup. It was an exciting back and forth affair. Yes, I'm reading this. At Tim Hortons Field, a real place, in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada.
Okay.
Leval Rougeau came from behind multiple times against the Calgary Dinos. I am told that the Dinos mascot is an actual T-Rex, which is pretty cool.
I like that.
Leval Rougeau came from an early 14-0 deficit They scored with 2:33 left in the fourth quarter to take the lead. They win the Canadian University Football Championship, Dan, 31-26.
Heck yeah. Just Le like
Rougeau.
Proving everybody wrong or right who picked them. Hey, Middle Tennessee. They won again. They scored 77. They just are continually good. Shout out to Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
All right.
San Diego State got murdered unexpectedly. I don't know where that came from, Colorado State, but good for... Is that Mike Bobo, right?
Yeah.
So, hey, good for Colorado State. Good for the Rams for finishing out the season in impressive fashion. My guy, Craig Bull, lost his final game of the season for Wyoming. And Hawaii is bowl eligible after somewhat of a disaster, recent disastrous season. So, and BYU, 8-4 with that schedule. That's not too shabby.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to end the show on this. We're going to do lightning round style. We're going to end the show on this very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read off the games for this coming week. The championship games, and you're going to guess the point spread. Colorado against Washington.
Washington minus 9.5.
Washington is now at minus 7.
Oh, okay.
Oklahoma State at Oklahoma.
Oklahoma State at Oklahoma in Norman. Oklahoma by 8.5.
Oklahoma by 13.
Okay.
That's a big one.
Yep.
Florida against Alabama.
Alabama by 20.
22.
Okay.
Virginia Tech against Clemson.
They play that game in...
Orlando.
Orlando, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Clemson by 12.5.
9.
Oh, okay. So that's the one I overshoot.
And then Penn State, Wisconsin in Indianapolis.
Okay. So Wisconsin doesn't throw it anyway, but there won't be wind. There won't be weather. The hands will be warm. I'm going to say Wisconsin by 3.5.
Wisconsin by 3.
Oh, boom. Okay. So now we know. I know Big Ten teams that aren't Michigan, Ohio State. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. Thank you to everyone who called in. Got a lot of great calls this week. Thank you to everyone who continues to listen. Thank you to everyone who shared our show throughout this Thanksgiving holiday weekend. We had a ton of new people writing in saying, we just found your show. We love it. Thank you to everyone out there who helps spread word of the verbal. It was a fun regular season. We've got one more week. One more week to discuss everything that's going to break down here as we enter into the college football postseason. We would urge you to join us on Wednesday as we preview those games and more. For that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thanks again for tuning into the show. Catch you all in a few days. Stay solid.
Peace.